Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. I'm Tammy Haddad, the founder of the Washington AI Network, where we bring together official Washington policymakers, DC insiders, and AI experts who are challenging and debating and just trying to figure out the rules of the road for artificial intelligence. Joining me today is Rohit Chopra, director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, a former FTC commissioner. Chopra has led the Bureau's efforts to regulate AI, but President-elect Trump and the Republican Party have a different plan. We're here to talk about consumer protections and the current AI framework. Are you laughing, Rohit, when I got that in there? And what they're doing to safeguard citizens' financial health. Rohit Chopra, welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast.
Good to be with you, Tammy.
I want to talk about your agency who have been so aggressive in helping consumers, leading the way for the Biden administration. There's so much to talk about with AI, but what's the biggest focus today in these waning days of the Biden administration? It's been 2 years, really, since the AI framework came out.
Well, let's really think about why did we set up the CFPB? And it was because the regulators didn't really have a clue on how to police some of the most complex financial instruments. And that was a subprime mortgage crisis that took away trillions of dollars of wealth. The CFPB was put in place to really be the watchdog for consumers, no matter if the products were super complex or whether they were simple. And we are trying to make sure that people don't get cheated and they understand the deal that they're getting into. But really, what we have been putting our magnifying glass on is all of the different ways that algorithms, artificial intelligence, and other advanced technology are reshaping the way we move our money. And we want to make sure that the longstanding protections that Americans have to keep their money safe, to know what kind of product they're getting into, and importantly, that their data is safe and secure. That's what we seek to vindicate every day.
Well, your mantra has been that the laws exist on the books today that cover AI. So all of this fuss, it's all right there. We just need to follow it, and companies need to follow it. Is that accurate?
I think there's something to the fact that while a lot of the issues involving AI are new, a lot of them are not new at all to us. I think a lot of Americans hear AI and think something that is ultra fancy. But for decades, we've seen how Americans have three-digit credit scores. They don't really know what goes into that formula. It's pretty opaque in a black box. It's guarded very jealously by companies like FICO. And we've also seen how much surveillance there has been in the last 50 years of our country. You know, in the 70s, there was a lot of outcry about who are all these companies collecting so much information about us, and they're selling it, monetizing it. So we really look to the laws that we have on the books. We have one law, Tammy, the Fair Credit Reporting Act. We think of this as something that gives us some ability to check our credit report, but it covers all sorts of agglomerations of personal data about us. And when it's turned into a report for sale, what we say is that there's some protections on it. We also know that companies under existing federal law, they got to fess up about why they are denying you a loan. So we have told them, if you don't understand how your fancy algorithm works and you can't tell people why they were denied, then you really can't use that. And I think what we've seen is being able to clearly communicate how some of the existing law applies has shifted a lot of companies into thinking, you know what, we should be able to be transparent when we're using this. There should be some sense of what is really going on under the hood here. We should be able to protect people's data so that it is not leaking all over the digital world. So there is need for more laws, for sure. But I always think we don't talk enough about how the laws today can really guard against some of the toughest issues that we're grappling with.
So let's drill down, say, on credit reports, because you just announced that medical bills will now not be included in the reports. The question is, how do you work with those companies? Do they come to you and say, hey, we're using AI to pull these different kinds of things together, in this case, also medical bills? Or how does it work now? How can you police what they're doing? Are they required to show it to you? And are there more requirements now?
In some jurisdictions, there is more of what I would call an FDA model, that before they go to market, they have to do some testing and they got to get a green light from the FDA before they start offering a drug. That's not how we typically regulate banking. We essentially, when it comes to consumers, whether they're getting loans or accounts, we have a set of laws. With the CFPB and some other regulators, we do get to conduct inspections and examinations. We do cite them when they are following the law. And as we've done in many, many actions recently, we take companies to court when they're violating consumer rights. So I think, Tammy, the question really is, where are they experimenting and what do we do about it? So we don't really want to be in a situation where they have to come ask us for every new thing they want to try. What we try and communicate is we're going to try our best to let you know how the existing laws apply. And you really got to work within those parameters. And some of it, again, is pretty simple. You got to tell people the reasons why they got denied. If you're selling all sorts of reports about people, you got to give people the right to dispute incorrect information. We have longstanding laws that you cannot discriminate based on race and other protected classes. So we've really muscled up at the CFPB when it comes to attracting top-tier technical talent. And we have really seen them crack some of those models and be able to find places where maybe the law hasn't been followed.
Let's turn to, say, AI chatbots, which have basically taken over the last 6 months. And I know they've existed before. People now, they don't know if they're dealing with a live person. And then when you add the pilots that are coming down, and I know you guys are talking about looking closely at them, what advice do you give consumers? And what are you saying to companies?
We really put a lot of focus on the customer service element. Because really what we learned from the mortgage crisis too, was that people who were in a rough spot on their mortgage, they could not get any answers from their mortgage servicing company on how to fix it. And in some cases, they got foreclosure notices from someone who didn't even own their loan. That's really because that mortgage system became almost like a robot operating autonomously with no real gut check on what was going on. So we really looked at a lot of our consumer complaints and others to conduct a study on chatbots being used in the financial arena. We had some interesting findings from it. One of them was that a lot of these chatbots are being anthropomorphized. In other words, they simulated to seem like a human. They're given human-like names. For example, Bank of America calls their chatbot Erica. And in many cases, they use certain types of tactics that are very obviously trying to make it seem like you're talking to a person. I'll give you an example, Tammy. When you're chatting with a chatbot, you will sometimes see on the other side three dots, which is what many of us are used to seeing when someone is texting with us and thinking or constructing a thought. The chatbot is not thinking and editing its language. They're not noticing a typo. So what it is a way to try and get people to think that this is a replacement. And what we found was that many of those consumers did end up in doom loops where they were just trying and it ends up needing to start over and over again. We also found that we wanted to ensure that those chatbots were not being given false information, because when you are the subject of identity theft, when there is something wrong in your account, you often need immediate intervention. And so we really talk to a lot of the companies too and say, some of this you actually have to make sure doesn't cross the line, but maybe you should also come clean about the fact that this is not a human being. And two, what is the way when someone is realizing that the chatbot isn't working, how can they actually escalate and talk to a human? And I think, Tammy, this problem could get worse as there is more deployment of chatbots, which, by the way, can be a very good way of answering some simple questions. You know, what's the closest branch? Right. What are the hours? And of course, that will get better over time, but we don't want a situation where robots are peddling wrong information and banks and financial companies are saying, well, that wasn't me, that was the AI. They got to be responsible for it.
Can they do that? Can they say the AI is responsible? Isn't the bank responsible?
Yeah, it is, because they are responsible for the representations that they make. That is something that has been a real shift in the past few years. There was a sense before that, well, you know what? If I can't figure out how this algorithm is making decisions, I'll just say the algorithm did it. And we're trying to say, no, the existing law actually requires you to tell the reasons why someone didn't get that loan. And you can't just pin the blame on your AI.
But all of this new technology is driven by companies. And in many ways, this is the first technology that you as government have had to spend a lot more time digging into and requiring more from companies to respond. Isn't that a complete change in the relationship?
I think it has been for some agencies. For us, I do feel that financial services has always been a little bit more on using lots of personal data to underwrite loans, on having pretty complex systems often to navigate a customer service situation. So has there been a learning curve? Absolutely. But I think we had some advantages in that some of these issues were not new. And in particular, the fact that we have a country where everybody is essentially assigned a 3-digit score called their FICO score, that really was in many ways a corollary for what we are seeing on just a more advanced scale.
All right, let's talk about personal data for sale. How do people protect their own data?
Well, I wonder if the question is what do we do so that people don't have to worry so much about protecting their data? One of the things that many people are accustomed to is getting these silly privacy notices or the things that you click through online that are full of fine print, where in that fine print, it basically says, we're going to take all your data and do whatever we damn well please with it. And I think that that is becoming something on the verge of having implications that we may not fully appreciate today. Right now, you have a lot of big tech companies, Google, Apple, others, really getting deep into financial services and payments. We even had to take a big enforcement action against Apple and Goldman Sachs for their financial services offerings. And the interesting thing that we have studied and investigated is the volume of data being collected about your individual payments when you tap that phone or when you're online using those payment providers. And it is lurching to a system that is much more like China. In China, you have two big players, WeChat Pay, Alipay, part of the big tech behemoths there. And they really have an insight on every single payment that is happening with consumers. And one of the things we worry about is to what extent is your payment information just being linked to almost everything about your life? And are we going to arrive at a day where the airline knows that you need to get to that funeral quickly? Or when they're selling you something online that they know your mental state, or they know exactly what you paid or saw on a competing store? Does that lead to a degree of personalized pricing in ways that make price tags almost a part of history and just gone? And that our behavior and our psychographic profile is being used to price us? And I think that that's why we have to make sure that whatever laws we have to stop intrusive surveillance, that we really use that aggressively. And we are seeing big tech companies want to start their own currencies. They want to be able to get more and more and more information, sometimes to feed foundational AI models that other technologies will be built on top of. So there has got to be some reasonable limits on the types of information that is harvested and monetized about us.
You've got how many days left of this Biden administration? Every day you're making announcements of actions. It's been very interesting to see not just CFPB, but the whole Treasury Department working on sanctions in all different areas. But at the end of the day, it gets turned over to the Trump administration and in their platform at the convention. And then most recently online, there have been calls for the end of the CFPB. So I wonder, first of all, are you going to resign?
I have a 5-year term. The president has full right to remove us any day. And we keep serving and discharging our oath every day. I've heard this thing about deleting the CFPB. Honestly, I don't even fully know what that means.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, that's part of DOGE. You've got Elon Musk. And have you ever met Elon Musk, by the way?
Won't comment, but certainly a user of many things that he has created. So,
and Vivek Ramaswamy, their plan is to take $1 trillion out of the budget. And it looks like that the target is on the CFPB's back.
When you're talking about deleting agencies, are you just tempting a big financial crisis? Are you tempting mass fraud to be perpetrated? A few weeks ago, we sent out, I think it was about $2 billion in checks to over 4 million people who were cheated in a credit repair scam. We've returned tens of billions of dollars for people on everything from being cheated by Wells Fargo, who created fake accounts. And I think we want to make sure that the laws on the books are actually being enforced. And that's really what the CFPB does, is to make sure that people, when they are navigating their financial life, are treated in accordance with the law and some basic sense of dignity. So, you know, I've also seen the president-elect talk about the need to go after high credit card interest rates. I've seen really places where there is a lot of common ground. I think a lot of people are sick and tired of being gouged on their credit cards, and that's something we've really focused on. I think we've seen broad public support for tamping down this proliferation of junk fees that just seems to be popping up in every part of life. And the CFPB has been ridding illegal junk fees really every day these past few years. So we'll see. And I'm hopeful that when it comes to protecting consumers, that the only place that that is controversial is with lawyers and lobbyists in Washington, because I think everywhere else, people want the financial system to have some accountability.
Do you know David Sacks? Have you met him? He's going to come in and he's going to be the White House czar for artificial intelligence and cryptocurrency.
I have not.
What advice do you have for him?
Well, I think that we really want to make sure that we are not just crowning corporate royalty. I think that's actually the way Europe likes to do it in their history, which is they like a few really big companies. And I think the way in which the U.S. has done really, really well is we have lots of little players duking it out. And that anyone is able to bring their great idea to market, and that they don't need permission slips from the very biggest companies in our country. And I really think there is some question about whether some of the big giants in the industries that we have, are they actually choking off progress? Or really, are we going to have a system that looks more and more like Europe and China?
And that worries you the most? Or what does worry you the most?
Well, I don't want us to lurch to a Chinese-style system of surveillance. I want us to have a vibrant way in which little companies stand a chance and that they're not squashed by their bigger competitors. And that's really, I think, what will help us keep going and going, and that there really is openness to everyone who has that great idea.
Is there anything you see on the Republican side, not necessarily the Trump side, but the entire Republican side in Congress, in states, anywhere that will continue the work that you're doing? Maybe not specifically CFPB, but this kind of work?
Well, we've seen lots of states pass into law some of the initiatives we've pursued, whether it's, you know, the real abuses on parking medical debt on credit reports that may not even be owed. Several states have banned that on their own. We've seen a lot of work on going after junk fees. And the list kind of goes on and on. And it's interesting. It's really behind closed doors in Washington. There's a lot of agreement on these core issues. Mm-hmm. And I think that we will see that the public support for some accountability and transparency, whether it comes to their mortgage or the most advanced uses of generative AI in their life, that we are really making sure that those values are being upheld. And I just don't see that as very partisan.
You're such a strong consumer advocate, but it's so hard to get that message across for people to understand. People have a hard time connecting the work that government does, not just for you guys, to their lives, but yet a lot of these things have really changed them. What do you think the best path is, other than going on CNBC, which I think is a really effective way, and you're good on CNBC, to get the word out to consumers, especially as we're talking about the decline of local newspapers and media in general?
Yeah, I really think that we need to prove it to individual citizens about the ways that they are holding their government accountable and how it's working for them. I'll tell you, Tammy, one of the things I do really frequently is I take a look at our consumer complaint database. Every month, hundreds of thousands of people file their cases with us, and it doesn't go into a black hole. We order companies to respond in many cases. It all goes on a public database, and you can see the stories of people who are being given the runaround about their credit report or their credit score, about how they were charged 4 overdraft fees instead of 1. And when we fix those, and every day people are getting responses from companies that say to us and the consumer, we're fixing it, it gives them a sense that their government is doing something. And you're right, it is also important that we tell people why it's so important. We don't want people to have to memorize acronyms, but we want them to know that there is a place that they can turn to for help and that there is someone watching and holding some of the most powerful companies accountable. They need to see that. And that's really, really critical. And every day, I know that those consumer complaints that are getting fixed for people, it's a real example of how government can work.
So Rohit, let's turn to Meta and Mark Zuckerberg. Quite a few announcements this week, from fact-checking to community notes. What's your take on their moves?
I look at some of these very large big tech empires, and I think some of them like to say, well, we're a search company, we're a social media company, and that's really not right. They are operating cloud infrastructure, and many of them are operating big banking and payments operations too. And I think some of the challenges that we have as a society with them is that they almost run their own kind of governments. You just used it in your question, Tammy. They're making policy changes. It's almost like you're talking about them like they're a legislature. And I think one of the things I've really found is that if there was more competition, more players, that we had interoperable standards and that they wouldn't have so much power, then maybe some of these decisions just wouldn't matter as much. So I really worry when there are private companies that can dictate the rules of engagement for our whole country? Because where is the accountability in that? And really, should that be the way we want our economy to run? Or should we have a way that we can more easily vote with our feet?
But with AI, these powerful companies have become much more powerful. And how does a regular consumer know the difference between what's real and what's synthetic material?
Well, that's what we're seeing already every day when we get reports about scams and fraud. Many people, older adults, are hearing somebody that sounds just like them. Many of us have seen our own voice being cloned. To what extent are videos of people going to just become more and more real? And we've got to make sure that there is some basic accountability for the deployment of these technologies, which when they fall into the wrong hands, can just create some very, very serious harm. And I think, you know, there is a mantra, it's most famously at Facebook, but of move fast and break things. I was involved in the 2019 significant investigation of Facebook when I was an FTC commissioner. And it was such a serious repeat offender case where they egregiously violated a law enforcement order. And the way the FTC in 2019 resolved it was a big $5 billion fine. And that fine gave a lot for Facebook to celebrate because they really didn't face any meaningful consequences. And I think they were popping champagne after that. So we've got to really see when it comes to this move fast and break things mentality, what if it does create systemic harm? And how do we bottle that up and make sure that it doesn't happen again?
So world leaders are gathering in 3 weeks in France to discuss all these issues around AI. They call it the AI Action Summit. So instead of voluntary commitments, they're asking for companies to commit. If you were going there on behalf of the United States, not too much pressure there, Rohit, what would you advise them?
Well, I think we've got to come to grips with the people all over the world who are being defrauded through these new types of technology. And how are we actually going to stop it from just getting even worse? And are we going to allow ourselves, particularly as the West, to lurch into more and more intrusive surveillance? Because I think that that's the way it could go, because that really is what powers a lot of these models to get better and improve. But we as people, through our governments and our democracies, should have to draw a line about what goes too far. And I think we just haven't gone through that exercise yet, and we got to do it.
China's going to be at that meeting as well. And you talk about surveillance society. You're talking about data. You're talking about social media. You're talking about financial surveillance, correct?
Well, it's all sorts. You know, I've been involved in looking at a lot of big hacks, Equifax, Marriott, Anthem, the list goes on and on. And I think we used to think that hacking was going to be, it was primarily back in the day a way for someone maybe to steal your credit card number. But now it is a part of statecraft to be able to assemble dossiers on each of us for who knows what, extortion, other types of micro-targeting. And I think one of the places we have tried to really make people understand is that you don't even need to crack a system anymore. You can buy all this information from data brokers and others. And so we have proposed some rules to put in place, to put some safeguards on that. I don't like the idea of us cutting and pasting some of these business practices that we see as pervasive in China about people constantly under watch. I think that's a real threat to liberty as well.
So Rohit, both you and Lina Khan have been attacked online, on TV, et cetera, for the work that you're doing, whether it's for companies or individuals, social, et cetera, for some of the things that you've said here today, protecting individual citizens. I just wonder, Has that bothered you at all? Has it changed the way you do anything?
You know, it's always funny to hear the strategies in which companies try to intimidate or to pillory their regulators. But Tammy, it really comes with the territory. And I think that if you are the head of a law enforcement or regulatory agency and every corporate CEO is singing your praises, that's probably a sign that something is going wrong.
You're not doing your job well.
Well, I like to make sure that we are being fair, but also that we are not dead fish. We cannot just play dead and make everybody happy. Sometimes that means being able to draw a line. Our laws draw those lines in many cases, and we have to hold the line. And that's part of what we do.
Well, thank you so much, Rohit Chopra, Director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks so much, Tammy.
Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.